Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course, yeah. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Get it up.
One of those covers of the Video Store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep, what in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
Okay, folks, it's another day here of the new normal of quarantine life in America, and you're listening to the Hall 9 Network and the beginning of what will undoubtedly be an ongoing seminar series in our focus on all things sort of horrific lately and the spiritual side of that aspect of film genre. And I'm joined again by an excellent panel of guests. I will let them introduce themselves after I quickly say hi to Ian, Noah, and Courtney. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
I'm great.
Ian, why don't you say hi first and then pass the mic along?
Yeah, hey everybody, this is Professor Klink on the microphones. Good seeing you all again. Hope everybody is safe and healthy, and peace be with you.
Hi, it's Courtney again. I'm super excited to be talking about some spiritual horror movies. It's my favorite.
And this is Noah Cutter Meyhoff, once again, and boy, let's get spiritual.
Yeah, let's sage the room first so that it's safe.
Yeah, I burned some Palo Santo earlier, so we're fine.
Call upon your protector spirits now and your prayer warriors and whatever else you need to do before, like, if you were... I always try to picture, like, one of those guys on, like, Paranormal State, like, okay, here's our little... This is what we do before we go into the house, and now we're going to be talking to ghosts, so let's see how this goes. But, yeah, we're going to be talking about spirituality in films, but mostly horror films. I guess horror films is sort of like their bread and butter of where they appear most. But go ahead, Ian. I feel like I cut you off there.
No. I have a first question for all of us. And this is something that it's a rule that I want to know if we agree with or if we all disagree with it or not. But vampires, if what? They have a cross, okay, if you put two sticks together, does that make a cross or... does it have to be a made by, or, you know, blessed by a priest in a church cross in order for it to get the vampire away? This is a debate I want to know about.
Oh, so strictly vampire speaking, like against vampires?
Yes. I've always found that interesting. Some movies will do the, hey, just put two sticks together and boom, now we got a cross. Or... it has to be from a church, from a priest, right there. It's been blessed. That's why it works. I always wonder what people think.
I have a good theory that I just made up, so it's not a concrete theory. If you're a Catholic, it has to be ordained by a priest or wouldn't ordained. Can you tell I'm agnostic? It needs to be blessed by a priest. If you're a Protestant, you can just slap two sticks together because Jesus will do the work. You don't need the church.
Wow.
That's really bold. I'm starting this off very controversially, just openly pitting two factions of Christianity against each other.
Hollywood does it all the time. I think we can take a cue from their book and do it here for our own purposes. But yeah, I mean, that does... It's the funniest thing is, have any films directly addressed that? Like someone going, well, hey, I'm an atheist, so it doesn't matter. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter what you are. It's what matters. First of all, what matters is whatever the truth of the rules of the universe of whatever movie is taking place in. But isn't it supposed to be the vampire's response to the signs of the church that are like causing a pain? But you have to believe, at least, all right, so if I'm going by Fright Night rules, because these are, I'm trying to think of the first vampire movies I watched as a kid. Friday Night Rules is you have to have faith in what you're... So if you just held up the cross and you didn't believe it wouldn't do anything. But then... like I think a couple years later in From Dusk Till Dawn, they were just like, well, this priest could make, you know, tap water into holy water, so I guess if it's a he believes, he can bless things, and then we can use them. So it does get a little hazy in there with what you ascribe to belief structure-wise as the vampire hunter versus the vampire.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. That's what I was thinking of. I was thinking of From Dusk Till Dawn, and I was thinking of some of the Peter Cushing, you know, Dracula films, where it's that rule. It's like, nope, this is ordained by a priest. This will work against Dracula. But then, you know, they're all saying it doesn't matter. Put two popsicle sticks together. Boom! Now you got now the vampire can't hurt you. So I always find that interesting. What movies follow the rules, especially with the religion part of it? Yeah, you know, what validates this cross? What validates that cross? Beliefs, all that stuff. I just very interesting. It came to my mind while talking about the subject.
And then some people take it way, way on the nose. I think, was it Wes Craven when he did Dracula 2000 and Dracula is Judas? It was just like, okay. I think you went a little far from where we were time-wise here.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite examples with the whole cross thing is Blood for Dracula, the Andy Warhol produced... one with Udo Kier as Dracula, and he comes into a room.
I haven't seen that one.
He comes in. Yeah. Oh,
neither. But just imagine Udo Kier as Dracula.
He's just a diva. You know, it's all about how much of a diva Dracula is, and he just walks into a room, and there's a cross on the wall in a hotel room, and he just goes, "Oh, this is terrible." So he's just kind of like, "This is a bummer." You know, it's really just, you know, like, "Ah, oh, man, the room isn't at exactly 72 degrees. This place sucks." So, I don't know. I think it's what
Dracula is a very fantastic dresser. So, you know, that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's got a great fur coat in that one. One of my favorite Dracula looks.
I wonder
it's a
if
great
the,
movie.
I wonder if the Gary Oldman look in Bram Stoker's Dracula was a little bit of a nod to the sort of divishness of somebody who would be however many hundreds of years old he is at that point in time in that story. Do we know what the age count on Dracula was by then?
I
should have had all this stuff up on my screen. This is like the most. This is our phase one of the seminar. It's the intro. We'll do better research for phase two, which will just be kind of going on and on as we continue to talk about horror films. But what about the new Dracula that was on Netflix? Did you guys check that out? The three-part sort of...
I haven't seen it.
It's it's interesting. It's definitely worth watching. There are parts that are way better than others, but it's definitely like Dracula light, you know, almost like the Netflix version of the CW effect of a property.
Oh no.
Interesting way to describe things. It's the Netflix version of the CW effect. Like, whoa.
You know what though? Here's the thing. Here's something funny, and maybe this is a bit too much of a tangent, but I personally don't think so. You know, when you say something like it's the CW effect, the power and association we have with those two letters, the CW and the shows with it, there it very well could be just the same effect that crosses have with vampires.
It
could just be it's the power that you put into an image and the association and what people believe about that thing. So to us, I guess the CW just has to be our cross. Although,
is hilarious.
That's just the core of magical thinking, which is what the image of a cross does.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily, I'm not saying is a bad thing. You know, magical thinking can be a very good thing. So for Christians, it's great. But I guess, you know, for vampires, it's that association we have with it.
Or what if, like, you were an atheist before you were...
You, and also with you.
What if, like, if you're like a vampire who is like an atheist when they were turned into a vampire, and all of a sudden they have to deal with all this stuff, and they're like, dude, you know, I lived my whole life not giving a crap about any of this, and now I actually have to follow these rules. I have to read the book. You know, what kind of shit is this?
That's pretty,
like
that's
homework
a fantastic
for my
idea.
Afterlife.
Dave,
you better
that's
jump on
dollar
that
idea
someone
right
else does.
There. That's great. I don't think anybody's covered that.
We're copywriting that. It's Hollow Nine Network's property right there. I mean, all of us are working on the project.
Copyright like 2020.
Quarantine day plus five.
We sealed it.
Day.
We've hit the big three.
It's happening. It's happening. Oh my God, we got the religious expert, we've got a graphic designer, we've got two film people and producers, we're good. We got our core group already, so we're going to be kickstarting this. I want everybody to spread this like wildfire all over your social media. That's the proof of the power of being quarantined and creativity right there.
And what was his job? He worked at Staples.
Yes. Yeah. I am still playing that Universal Paperclips game, too. Oh, man. All right. What about... So, are we going to keep it in the realm of Christianity, or do we want to also explore... Because I think sometimes we got a lot of Christianity versus other religions, but then there are other films that just live in the world of other religions as well. Where do we want to go with that?
I think just jumping off the idea of like being an atheist and being thrust into like a religious world you don't care about will bring me to the movie I want to talk about the most, which is Stigmata.
Nice. Ooh. Oh my God. I didn't even realize that was a tee up for that. That was so good. You guys are awesome. We got to do this a lot.
I love Stigmata. It is everything I want out of a movie. It completely captures like that's what I want everything I design to look like and feel like. It's just like I love the way it looks, let alone everything it's about. But in that, you have Patricia Arquette's character is like kind of a lazy atheist. Like, she doesn't really care. She's not like, oh, you know, it's not like her mission to be an atheist, but she just really doesn't care. She's just a hairdresser just hanging out. Yeah. And then her mom sends her just some random rosary, so she thinks, and then she's burdened with the stigmata, and all of a sudden she has to care about Catholicism and the literal word of Jesus.
It was also such an indictment of street crime when you are a tourist in other countries. It's like this kid totally ripped the cross off of a dead body that was on its way to being buried and then sells it on the street, and now you're going like, wow, I really have to be scared of all those trinkets I might buy in the airport from now on on my way back. Like, holy crap, I don't want to all of a sudden have to deal with the stigmata happening to me. Well, I think it also came out around the same time that Hollywood was really into exploring in a mainstream way, I think, especially Christianity. And that movie at the same time came out, End of Days, I think, with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
Which
was
so two Gabriel Byrne religious movies there. And then I think around the same time there was another one that came to mind too. Oh, Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves a year or two before that. So it was like all of a sudden we've got like a lot of mainstream devil situations happening, and a lot of people probably in the same situation as Patricia Arquette who are like, all right, dude, I'm just chilling and going to the movies, and now all of a sudden I have to be like, wait, so is this shit is real? Like, this is what you guys talk about on Sundays when you all go to the thing? And I'm like, oh my God. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting though. You know, my father actually is a United Methodist minister, and you know, it's funny to how you can use films in a church environment. You know, and one of the things that I found interesting on my list of films, and it's I would say it's a complete opposite of Stigmata, but if we're talking about religion and film. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Have you all seen that one? Oh my God, where they think they're going to meet God in what's the name of the place that he calls it? Oh, there's a name. It's like his version of
Shakara. Shakara or something like that?
Shakari, well, that's what it is. Shakari. You know, the God of Shakari would not do this.
Yes, you know, William Shatner wanted to do... He said, where would the Star Trek Enterprise go? Well, they would go to see God. And I think that is one of the most interesting movies in that canon. You know, and what I love about it is just at the very end when they actually do find this thing that calls itself God, my favorite moment is William Shatner going, you know, questioning God. and going, you know, and Bones going, hey, why were you doing this? Well, doesn't he know? Isn't he God? Why can't I question God?
What does God need with a starship? What does God need a starship? You know, it was all these like.
What does God need with a starship? Yeah.
Well, you know. I mean,
Kirk v. God, man.
They found God chasing a spaceship.
Oh right, but it was hidden behind the Hale-Bob comet.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. You can use these films. You know, and I remember my dad actually would show clips like that in church. You know, you've seen this. You know, this
oh wow, really?
Same movie to point out stuff. You know, it's great. You know, but yeah, almost in the opposite. You know, opposite of Stigmata.
You know? I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but. Again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code Gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there, all right.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom. Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.
Yeah, but I mean, finding God on a spaceship.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because it's another area where, you know, sci-fi used to be sort of divorced from kind of some of these areas of exploration with the characters. Definitely divorced from things like horror until we get Alien, where Ripley, you know, where Ridley Scott did a nice blending and kind of set the stage. And I think much like End of Days is a failed attempt at trying to make Stigmata or a Stigmata type movie, I would think that, like, you could kind of see Star Trek V as like a failed attempt because that was also Shatner's directorial debut, right? So he's trying to do what Ridley Scott did, and he's just really making it, finally, Kirk can stand up to God, and I could be the most badass character ever. And all the Star Trek, all the Trekkies probably were like losing their friggin' mind. They're like, of course Shatner would beat God. Come on now. But it was even the fact that you would talk about God in terms of somebody who could be beat. You know what I mean? It's almost like in the way that South Park puts Jesus in the boxing ring with Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're just like, it almost wasn't okay to do this. or it wasn't done so, I guess, with such care, such carefreeness, I guess, such ease. Like, it's like, all of a sudden we got Pacino dancing around as the devil running a law firm in New York. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I guess. We also had De Niro doing Angel Heart playing the devil there. So, you know, the devil did have...
Mickey Rourke, yes. Oh, I forgot about that.
Louis Cipher. Yeah, man. Angel Heart, such a cool movie. An understated movie, but and underrated as well. But there was a place, I think, in the early days of like the 70s and 80s where if you made an understated movie, it still had a lot of punch behind it because the concept would stick in your head. And now it's sort of like if it's too like The Town versus Heat, right? Like, I was just watching The Town with Carrie, who wished she could make it, but she couldn't make it tonight. And I was like, this is sort of like, clearly Ben Affleck loved Heat growing up and wanted to make Heat, And parts of it are very Heat-esque, but parts of it are also very nothing. And yeah. That, yeah, and it just becomes a boring attempt, you know?
None for you mask.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it had its moments, though, and you could see what it was trying to do. And so it's sort of interesting that we had this whole period in the mid to late 90s where everything was about the god and devil. It was actually all leading up to the millennium, right? All the year 2000 stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it led up to the Passion of the Christ. You know, all these studio heads made these movies and all the, and they were all upset when Mel Gibson's movie hit with crowds. You know, they all go, well, what happened? How did this work? Why did that movie work, but this other stuff didn't work? And I think to this day they're still debating why did that one get through that others didn't. To be honest, in my opinion only, I think why that movie worked was how graphic it was. I think honestly that's why people went to go see it. It wasn't just another movie, you know, because how many movies about, you know, Jesus Christ has there been? The greatest story ever told, Jesus Christ Superstar, King of Kings,
Last Temptation,
Last Temptation, Christ, absolutely, yeah, you know, all the, you know,
my
had
favorite
all,
movie.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
Last Temptation is your favorite. That's awesome.
Yep.
Oh, Gordon, you gotta talk about Temptation. I know you love that movie.
Does it count? I mean, it's not horror, so I feel weird.
But it is blasphemous.
It's definitely blasphemous. Yeah,
it's really not, though.
I grew up with no religion, but my mom's side of the family was, like, super Catholic, and they tried to, like, convert me, and it totally backfired, and I was, like, traumatized by the sight of Jesus for most of my childhood. And then I ended up watching Last Temptation of Christ in high school because my dad really, he loved it, and Peter Gabriel did the score, and we both really love Peter Gabriel. So that was kind of like, okay, I'll watch this. I like Willem Dafoe. And it totally made me like reevaluate how I feel about Christianity, because I didn't know the Bible. I didn't know the story. Like, I knew the basic story of Jesus, but I'd never sat and like examined it on this level. So for a while, that was like my interpretation of the story of Jesus, which is definitely a little warped, obviously.
It's a little warped.
But it's always stuck with me just to see, like, I finally understood Jesus as a human rather than this like fantastical figure, which for someone that's like on the outside looking in, it's hard to contextualize that he was a real person. And that movie did that for me, and it definitely kind of sparked my very weird obsession with Catholicism that I have now. Fascination. Yeah, that's a good word. But yeah, I love it. I think Willem Dafoe's great. It's my favorite Scorsese movie. Obviously, it's my favorite movie, so of course it's my favorite Scorsese movie, but I think it's great.
Well, you know what he does that's interesting, though, with the portrayal of the devil? You know, in a weird way, Scorsese actually does what I think really good horror filmmakers do. They put the innocence in that character. When you expect this, you know, big horned monster looking thing with hooves for feet and stuff, he portrays the devil as this little child. Which is even more creepy. You know, like, that is creepy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a blatant horror trope right there. I mean,
I
never thought of it that way, but you're totally right.
Humanizing the devil. Humanizing the devil in a non-threatening way, I guess, or trying to take the mythos away.
If this is the worst thing on this entire, you know, galaxy is the devil, and you put it on screen as this little child, like, that is actually, like, you know, would creep. You know, and kids always creep people out anyways.
And she's a very stoic little girl, like the way she speaks. And
it's almost like a dark little prince.
Yeah, well, and then, like I said, you know, Passion, I think what did it was, in a weird way, Mel Gibson also took from horror too. You know, the beating and the mutilation that happens throughout that, the blood and all. I mean, he really almost does what a horror director does to that. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not comparing Eli Roth and Mel Gibson, but it's a similar thing, you know. Well, I was just gonna say, you know, Mel Gibson portrays, you know, skin being ripped apart. Eli Roth has a girl showering in blood. What's the difference in a weird way? You know, that mm-hmm. I just find that interesting.
And of course, that has to then tie even people watching Hostel 2 who don't realize there's all these religious sort of symbology happening around mm-hmm. some of those sequences. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of like delve yeah. into what that meant for that character. You know, it's there's always Hostel, especially. I did one early episode of the Hollow Knight Network was discussing when the first Hostel movie came out on DVD. And how movies like this get written off right away from the gate. You know, you just from the trailer, someone's going to be like, oh, that's cinematic garbage. I have no need to watch that. But then when you watch a movie like that and they can lace in all these little sort of psychological wavelengths, these what we would call now algorithms, I guess, that are going to sort of stick with you after you watch the movie and make you think, he's actually a pretty talented guy. I mean, we did that whole tangent about Cabin Fever and last time we recorded together, so
yeah.
Eli Roth, there's a reason he became sort of a legend as quickly as he did.
Yeah. Always surprises me. You know, it's like I always think I know what I'm going to get, and then there's always something that surprises me. You know, I mean, even when I had first heard about Hostel, you know, it's one of those movies where I thought, you know, so much ahead, a lot like how I thought Saw was going to be, you know, in which I was a lot like, well, this is going to be, you know, this whole torture porn thing that people throw around. And then, you know, no, I mean, it's actually there's a lot more to it than that. And I think, you know, Eli Roth especially is one of those directors that can open you up to that concept with movies like Hostel. Kind of a gateway, if you will.
Yeah, and how are you supposed to be watching that movie and not be sitting there thinking, so this is going on right now. This is happening somewhere.
Absolutely.
And then if you want to take this discussion of religion and spirituality in films, and a film like that really doesn't have any overt spirituality to it, it does make you sit back and go, well, if I'm living in a world where that is happening right now, and it's not only happening to where it's so commonplace that we have a guy making a movie about it, a whole world watching movies about it, but no one's instantly getting up going, so how come we don't have a SWAT team going to look for this place? So... Mm-hmm. Is that not an example of how we could be living in a sort of hell on earth, as it were? I mean, what kind of a place would have these types of things happening in them? And then is that what we're supposed to think when we watch movies like this? Is it possible that we kind of are surrounded by demons right now and that this shit is going on? It's just not happening to us, the four of us, right now, but it could. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, and that's to bring in another non-horror movie, but that has religious connotations. No one's going to laugh that I found a way to wedge this in. What? But First Reformed was kind of an art house.
Pretty scary to me.
Ethan Hawke film that came out 2 years ago, and he plays a priest who takes up kind of almost like, I don't want to say eco-terrorism, but he really gets into the concept of global warming and how that's affecting and how... like the church should do something about us and about it. And he says, will God forgive us for what we've done to the earth? And it's not just that, it's for what we've done to each other. You could ask the same question. It's not necessarily evidence of like, oh, there isn't a God. It is exactly like what you're saying, that we're already in a hell almost, because he may have abandoned us for being so shitty.
Interesting. I love this.
I thought you were looking on the list for a sec, and then, you know, the list we wrote down, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, what are you looking at? And then you say First Reformed, that's not even on the list.
It's not even on the list.
Yeah.
Just always in my head.
But I would like to piggyback, now that you bring up First Reformed, one that really sticks out to me that came out a couple of years ago was Mother by Darren Aronofsky.
Which I have not seen, but I've read quite a few essays on, so I feel like I'm good to go with this.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those that it is spooky, it is uncomfortable, very much feels like a dream, you know, just a really strange dream you're having. And, you know, Darren Aronofsky claims that it is about climate change and basically what we've done to the earth. But at the same time, it has all these religious allegories in it. You know, we have... Javier Bardem, who's the godlike figure, and Jennifer Lawrence's Mother Earth, and basically because of all the distractions, it almost views religion as a distraction from caring for the earth, because there are these demonized, well, not demonized, but really demonic figures, and there are characters that do resemble Cain and Abel, and slowly there's this distraction away from, in these, you know, rather violent and just total, it's total mayhem. But with Mother, we take those religious allegories and we see them as almost something that's pulling us away from what's right in front of us and what we should be taking care of. And, you know, there's a lot of stances you could take on that. It's, I'm not saying Darren Aronofsky's stance on it is right or wrong, because I don't think there is a right answer to that. But it is interesting to see that, you know, we can take something like religion in a movie that, like a horror, because it is a lightly considered a horror. It was marketed as horror.
Well, it's disturbing to say the least.
Yeah, it is disturbing. There's disturbing elements, but it is just, it's all of a sudden, it's like this. It's like what's happening right now with the COVID-19 disease. It's all of a sudden, you know, you think there's these few little things that are happening, and they build up and build up, and you're not really noticing what's going on around you. And a lot of it is just, it's strange, but it's also fascinating. And then out of nowhere, there's this spike of just chaos, because you realize that everyone's been, like Javier Bardem's character in that, he's a writer, and we're supposed to kind of take his recent publication as the Bible, and all these people are then exposed to this enlightening masterpiece that they're all freaking out about, and then starting to abuse Jennifer Lawrence's character and her home. So
they did not market that movie well.
Because I definitely want to watch it more now than I did after I saw the trailer. Like, hearing that, I'm just like, and I've read some essays that talk a few about some of the things you mentioned, but it definitely still didn't. It didn't get me past the, I looked at the trailer and was just like, nah, I'm okay. You know what I mean? Like, well, I've been down this road with you before, Darren. We've done this a few times. I might sit this one out.
I mean, it's worth it. It's actually, I mean, I would say it's my favorite movie of his. And, you know, I've seen most of his movies, and I will actually say, probably because of the subject we're talking about today, that's really what made me gravitate towards it. And I didn't even know there was any spiritual element to it. And then about halfway through, I'm like, wait a minute. Every single one of these characters are deliberate. Every single person and setting is allegorical. And with that previous knowledge I had, I was like, wow, this completely changes it. So yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Well, then I feel like the flip side of that is something like Midsommar, which is just kind of just like Wicker Man-esque, but really looking at like an isolated religion that like totally acknowledges modern civilization, but is still keeping to some pretty draconian practices, to say the least.
Yeah. You know, one that I really like that kind of does that too is, and I, you know, some people don't view it as horror per se, but I put it in the horror section of The Store, but The Village. The Village, to me, that was almost like, you know, they created this religion, you know, don't want to ruin the ending, but, you know, to save themselves from society, they created their own mythos and religion, and they created their own monsters to basically say, this world's getting too much. We got to hide ourselves from where it's going. Let's create a religion to protect us. I think that sounds very similar.
You know, I've never heard it described as, so a cult emerged and a bunch of people are living in it and don't realize it. I've never heard that you put it in that context. It's like, wow. A very disappointing movie from how it, again, a lot of mishandling of the of promoting of these movies too, because I'm sure there are people who chose not to watch some of these movies because they saw, oh, that's going to be some stupid monster thing. It's not going to even touch on the human stories that The Village wraps around. I remember showing that movie to my grandma, may she rest in peace, a while ago though, and I didn't really prep her for it. I just said, hey, you know, this is a movie I didn't really like when I saw it in the theater, but it's grown on me now that I own it on DVD and have watched it on cable a couple times. And when it ended, she just looked at me and she goes, that was a really good picture. And I was like, oh, wow. And I was like, you know, like, that's like one of those things where you're like, you know, there's this delicate balance you have to find in when you watch movies or when you're approaching something, and it's obviously not the delicate balance the promoters have in mind when they're putting together the trailers or even the studio when they're putting together a project. When you think about the fact that studios don't even care about characters, that's a hard one for us as people who appreciate characters to swallow. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy to think of how these things could work in so many different ways. Like, I never would have even thought of The Village as a religious a film that was sort of centered around a religion or a spirituality, but that's pretty interesting to put it that way. I really like that. Are there any others that you feel like are sleepers like that, where you're watching something and all of a sudden you're like, oh, holy crap, this is really a Christ allegory, or this is really about Buddhism? I mean, like, isn't that what The Fountain is supposed to be, kind of like a little bit of a dash through the multi-lives of Buddhism or something like that? I only watched it once.
To touch on Aronofsky again, of course, yeah. He's going to be in this lot. Pi, have you guys seen Pi?
It's the only one I haven't seen. Besides Mother.
Yeah, I love that. Might be my favorite of his, and that's really that's what started me even caring about, like, calling myself an agnostic. Like, I consider it like the agnostic movie, because it's the idea of this mathematician trying to crunch this, like, this number that it's all he cares about, finding this number, and it's God, essentially. So different religions start chasing him down to try to say, like, oh, well, you're going to prove that our God is the right God, right?
And that's what that movie's about. Like,
yeah.
I got to check that out for sure. I remember seeing the trailer, really, and see, so again, the trailer did not really show that at all.
See it at first.
Yeah, I mean, one that comes to my mind, you know, it's more of a play, but, you know, it's a great movie by Sidney Lumet. But the famous Peter Schaeffer, Equus, you know, where basically, if you really look at the idea of Equus, you know, of course, we all know people always call what they call them. You know, of course, that's the horse fucking play. You know, that's the movie where the kid tries to fuck a horse. Well, it's more than, you know, it's really more than that. What it is that's the movie where what he's trying to do is he wants to know who he is. And, you know, he finds his God in a horse. And the whole point is, if I can conquer this animal, you know, then if I can kill this horse, then I've killed God. And the point is, if I can kill God, then what is the meaning to it all? And, you know, you could look at Equus actually as a horror movie in a weird way. Especially with the way that Sidney Lumet does it. And you know, when you're asking, Dave, about the, you know, does something slip in there a little bit? I think Sidney Lumet knew exactly, you know, the God intention, the religious intentions of that, you know, that play. And I'm sure Peter Schaeffer, you know, said that that's what it is. But, you know, Lumet hid that when he presented this movie to, I think, audiences. And I think a lot of directors will do that. I was just watching a special edition of The Color Purple, you know, the Steven Spielberg movie, where he talks about, you know, the reason that, you know, the whole reason of The Color Purple is, you know, Alice Walker, the writer, says, you know, the color purple is in everything if you really look at it. Everything has a shade of purple in it, and to her, that's God putting things in everything. Yeah, we all have some purple in us. And so, you know, again, way not a horror movie, but, you know, that symbolism gets in there.
And I should throw out there that horror doesn't necessarily have to be a prerequisite. I think that's where we kind of landed on when we were chatting after our last recording. But, you know, we are film fans in general, the whole sort of... I always considered, I guess, kind of like the Great American Movie Ride in Disney World, that there's this sort of just movie universe that all movies exist in. And that sometimes that universe, like the many worlds theory, some parts of it have rules that work differently for some films than they do for others, and, you know, we as the audience can then get to pick and choose. It's the only time I'm behind the pick and choose approach. It's, I feel like a lot of people take that approach with religion, and I'm like, well, isn't that the one thing you're not supposed to take that approach with? So I think for films, we're allowed. There's quite a variety out there.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollownine.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback. join in the conversation and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
It's not easy butchering people. It's hard work. You know, there's a lot more like me.
We're talking to serial killers.
Serial killers!
New terminology.
Are criminals born, or are they formed?
How do we get ahead of crazy if we don't know how crazy thinks?
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Welcome to the Hollow Nine Mindhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is David Clone from the Hollow Nine Network, just checking in saying, hey, what's up to all our Radio Haver fans listening to us from all around the globe. We want to thank you for all the live streams during our programming, and a big thanks to Drew Carson for giving us the slot. We've got some renovations going on at the home base at hollow9.com. Pretty soon, it's going to have a whole new look and feel, so just get ready. Until then, keep rocking over at Radio Haver.